This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Turnover of the game. For Wiley, a three is good. Now South Carolina with numbers. Johnson bodies in and finishes. Cardoso working O'Grady. Cardoso and the foul. Johnson's three is good. For Wiley whips it out. Pow Pow. Yes, yes. Squeezes it out to For Wiley. Pow Pow's three again. With those two fouls as Kitts maneuvers inside. Hall lets it fly. You bet. For Wiley flips it ahead. Johnson. Another. Tessa Johnson. It's in the pull-up. No. Rebound. Snare. Cardoso. Unstoppable. Perfection with a touch of sweet redemption. Undefeated South Carolina. Its third national championship.
The clock ticks down. 2 seconds to play. Celebration in Cleveland. Perfection wears garnet and black. The South Carolina Gamecocks complete their first perfect season with their third national championship.
Yep, it is again. South Carolina went on the road and brought a title back to their town. Brad Muller, the voice of the Gamecocks. We've been overworking him when it comes to being on our program, but we sure are glad he accepts the invitation. You just saw his final call as the seconds ticked off the clock. And Brad, the big question that we have here is, where are you going to, what finger is this ring going on? You don't have any fingers and toes left.
Yeah, it's good problems. You know, if you combine this with 8 SEC championship rings, you know, that's 11 rings. So you're going to have to start wearing toe rings or something now.
Some people like that, you know, make sure you've got some sort of flip flops on or something like that too. Wow. I mean, first of all, congratulations to the entire basketball program, and you included as a part of it. We know how much Don appreciates what you do.
A lot of fun. Never thought I'd have that much fun in Cleveland.
Oh, no, right. Yeah. Well, so to the game itself, and JC mentioned this earlier, and I think I was really good. And I think we all thought that, I mean, they weren't just going to come out and be asleep at the wheel. Like, they were fired up for this thing. And so they come out and it's 10-0. What were you thinking?
You know, I wasn't as worried when South Carolina got down 10-0. Obviously, you know, you want to go down there and, you know, kick them in the pants a little bit, say, all right, come on, because you don't want to get that far behind a team that's got someone like Caitlin Clark. But I wasn't too worried because I'd seen his practice the day before and then shoot around the day of the game. I knew they were locked in, and I knew they were ready. I think maybe they were just a little overexcited to start, and, you know, shots just weren't going down. You know, but I was concerned. But the thing that concerned me more was after the little 10-0 run, we'd scored a couple of buckets. And I don't know if you guys remember this, but at one point there was a Caitlin Clark, a two-handed shove of Bree Hall, and sent her sprawling backwards. I mean, it wasn't just, you know, it's a little arm bar. It was a two-handed shove of Bree Hall that frees her open. She gets the ball, you know, knocks down a three, and it happened right in front of our bench, and there was no foul. And I remember thinking, okay, we may not win this game because they're not going to let us win this game if you're not calling that a foul, because it was so blatant and one of the worst no calls I've ever seen. That's when I was worried, because I said, if they're not going to call that, we're not going to get a call. And then fortunately, the Gamecocks took things into their own hands and played some great defense, especially after the first quarter, and, you know, started hitting shots because, you know, Clark had 30 points, but on what, 10 of 28 shooting. You know, you'll take that. If she's going to take 28 shots and only get 30 points, sign me up every time. And, you know, we shot it well and the lockdown. She had 18 points in the first quarter. She only had 12 points the rest of the game. So, you know, I knew we'd be okay, that we'd get our run to get back into it. But I was a little worried in that first quarter because of that no call. But when I thought we really had a chance to win was right at the end of the first half, even though it was only a 3-point lead at halftime, when Raven stole the ball from Clark and took it in for a layup, and you just felt all the wind kind of come out of Iowa, I thought, because they blew an 11-point lead in a quarter. And I felt like we've got all the momentum. They can build on that in the second half. That's when I really started feeling good about it.
Yeah, man, you said some really killer stuff there, because I'm with you. That shove, I thought the same thing. I thought, man, if this is how this game is going to be called. And then there were some calls, some touch fouls on her.
Right.
Correct me here. Were we seeing this? Like, so I'm not crazy, right? Like, we were literally seeing the same thing on television y'all were seeing in the arena. How was Don reacting to this?
You know, it's funny because, you know, there's always going to be, especially when you're a fan, there's going to be 50-50 calls that, you know, in your mind are bad calls. And I get it. And I'm that way too. I'm a fan, even though I'm, you know, calling the game. At the end of the day, those don't bother me as much. I don't lose sleep over those. But it's the blatant one that I mentioned there where you just – it boggles my mind. I actually talked to Don the day after the game when we were getting ready to get on the bus to go to the airport, and I told her the same thing I told you guys. You know, I said, that's when I was worried, when they didn't call that. And she had told me how, you know, she had spoke to one of the officials shortly after that, and the official basically gave her a warning, said he was going to tee her up if she didn't stop. And she basically said, go ahead, warn me, tee me up. And, you know, to paraphrase what she said, she says, we're not taking this again, because there were some calls that didn't go South Carolina's way last year in the Final Four, in the loss to Iowa. that, you know, put kind of, even though they only lost by one possession, that kind of put them in a bind. There were, I think, two first quarter fouls last year called against Aaliyah Boston. The second one was atrocious. I do remember that. And there was just, you know, a lot of things that just didn't go their way in terms of calls. And, you know, she said she was frustrated by it too, because she said, we're not doing this again, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, again, there's going to be calls that are 50-50 that, you know, through our Garnet and Black lenses, we're going to say, oh, that was a bad call. And the folks in Iowa probably thought there were some calls that didn't go their way as well. That's part of every game. But it's the blatant ones that everyone in the house could see. I knew it was bad. The one that I mentioned was bad. And I don't want to just belabor this one point. But and it was bad when there was a media member sitting next to me who was just a national media member, had, you know, no allegiance to either team, hits me, you know, smacks me in the arm and points to the TV monitor when they're replaying the shove. And you know, she puts her hands up like this, like, what the heck? And I'm like, okay, it's not just me that saw that. So, yeah, it's frustrating. And, you know, officials get reviewed and hopefully that gets reviewed. But in the end, you know, I always thought, South Carolina has enough because of their depth to wear even a great team like Iowa down. And that's what they did. I think you could see it in the second half. I think Caitlin Clark was fatigued. Not just from our game. I think the UConn game wore them out because UConn almost got them. They played great defense as well. UConn held Clark to a season low, 21 points, which for most people would be a great night. But for her, it was a season low. So I think, you know, the Gamecocks just wore her down a little bit and made her inefficient, like as Don likes to say. And, you know, I always thought if the Gamecocks shoot their average, they're going to win because they're a good shooting basketball team and it's hard to keep up with them because of their depth. And they were killing it. You know, it's one thing when you've got 6'7" inside, but it's another thing when you can also, you know, shoot, over 40% from 3-point range. When you've got Tessa Johnson coming off the bench and going for 19, that opens up the inside. That allows, you know, Cardoso, Kitts, Watkins, whatever, to have more one-on-one opportunities because you've got to defend now on the perimeter. You can't do both. You can't sell out for both. And when they sold out trying to protect the inside, you know, Tessa Johnson, Tahina Pau-Pau, they hit some big threes. When they tried to come out on the perimeter, Camilla one-on-one, yeah, we're going to win that battle. So it was the best of both worlds there.
Man, first of all, it's all good on Dawn. Because you saw it, they showed that on TV, not to belabor the whole point here, is that certainly moving on to what happened in the game to actually win the thing. Yeah. But good for Dawn. And you could see he pointed and said, you know, you're getting a warning or whatever it was. And I wasn't sure what she said, but it felt like she was like, have at it, big guy.
Yeah,
you know, but it's not going to stop me.
It was along those lines because, and again, it was atrocious. And, you know, you just don't want to see a game like that ruined by something that the players don't have control over. Because, you know, Carolina played great. Iowa played great. You got to love the way Iowa came out. I mean, holy cow. I mean, they came out like gangbusters. You know, don't forget, this was their second straight trip to the national championship. This wasn't a fluke. They wanted to win. You know, they knew this was their best shot to get a title because, you know, there's not too many Caitlin Clarks going around and there's not too many of them that go to Iowa. So, you know, this was their best chance to get a title. And that's no disrespect to them, but, it's just a fact. There's a lot of talent that's spread out now, but, you know, there's not a ton of McDonald's All-Americans that have gone to Iowa in recent years. Maybe they will now. I don't know. But, you know, Caitlin Clark was one of the most special players, you know, we've seen in our lifetime, or at least in the last 25 years in women's college basketball. And, you know, that was their big opportunity to win one, perhaps. And, you know, obviously frustration for them, but that was a darn good basketball team. And just glad South Carolina, you know, played better for three quarters.
Yeah, so clearly the number, the stat line that has gotten all the attention is the 37 to nothing bench points stat line that clearly favors Carolina. That's quite frankly, that's ridiculous. You don't have one player and score a point from your bench. I mean, wow. Yeah. But with that said, I think that the stat line, and as the game went along, and I didn't know, I think I went on the ESPN app and just looked to see if I could get an update, or the Gamecocks app actually, was the rebounds. And then the final stat line, Carolina had 51 rebounds, Brad.
Yeah.
That's 22 more than Iowa. You can't beat Carolina if they out-rebound you by 22 and their bench has 37 more points than you do. I don't care what team's on the other side. There is no – unless they miss every shot that they take, which isn't going to happen.
Right.
There's nothing – there is no stat line in the game of basketball that can compensate for that. So those two things going in Carolina's way as heavily as they did, it seemed at some point in time this thing was going to be over, and you could kind of start to feel that. I felt like sometime in the third quarter, about mid-third quarter, it was like Iowa's gassed, Carolina's getting the boards, bench comes in, they put points in the – I mean, this thing's over, and it was.
Yeah, you know, the rebounding obviously was huge. You know, and again, when you got Camilla, because, you know, she's huge and can do what she does, whether it's, you know, getting a quick defensive rebound to, you know, not giving up second chances, not allowing Caitlin Clark to shoot it more than once in a possession is huge. And then, you know, getting your own, you know, getting your team's own misses and sticking them back for easy twos. It wasn't just her. I mean, Chloe Kitts had a quiet double-double, if you will. It was one of those things I looked down and said, holy cow, she's got a double-double. You didn't realize all that she was doing on both ends of the floor. You know, I thought Sanaya Fagan played great, even in just limited minutes, where she had big rebounds, had big buckets, you know, in addition to the rebounds, finishing under the basket. You know, there was a lot of well-contested shots from, you know, less than 4 feet that a lot of times they miss, you know, and they made them. They made the two-footers. They made the four-footers. And, you know, Fagan was a big part of that. Chloe Kitts made some great mid-range shots as well, which she is apt to do. And then Ashlyn Watkins, even when she doesn't score a lot, what she's able to do on the boards most nights is incredible. I mean, shoot, she had, what, 20 rebounds in the semifinal win against NC State. She was channeling her inner Dennis Rodman there, and it was just tremendous. And, you know, when you've got – I've always been told that, you know, rebounding a lot of times – is a want to kind of stat. I mean, you can't help it if you're 6'7", you're going to get more, you should get more rebound than anyone else. But as a team, when you're that dominant under the glass, that's a want to. That's boxing out. That's, you know, crashing the glass. It's good putting yourself in good position. And the Gamecocks wanted to rebound. They wanted to limit Iowa to one shot and out as many times as they could and give themselves second chances.
Brad Moeller, voice of the Gamecocks, 1220 here on Inside the Gamecocks. The show. So let's talk about Camilla. You know, she's the big name that's departing. As crazy as it is, this dynasty that Dawn Staley has begun literally returns everybody next year, which should be pretty scary to the rest of college basketball. But when you look back at Camilla Cardoso's career, transferring in from Syracuse, and it was her time to shine. I don't know what they do. They've gone from Asia to Aaliyah to Camilla. Sigh, God help who's next to live up to this. Joyce, you're the best player in the country. So pop right in and you know, do that on this level. But when you look back at Cardoso's career, how do you describe not just her value as a player, but her value as a person to this program? What?
I think as a player, it's, you know, the player development, because if she got here, she was good. She had a good first year at Syracuse. But the main thing with her was her confidence, where, you know, for the first couple of years, they wanted her to be a little more selfish, you know, realizing you're the big out there. You get it. You don't have to pass it out all the time. You know, if you're one-on-one, go take it. You know, don't bring the ball below your ears because, you know, because there's times she almost didn't want to be the star, so to speak, or the focal point, because I think she was self-conscious about that. She's a very unselfish kid, where she always wanted to pass out and to get, you know, get her teammates involved, and didn't want to feel like she was hogging the ball. But her being coachable and listening to saying, shoot the ball. If we get it to you down low, shoot it. We want you. That's what we're trying to do first. That's option one every time down the floor. If someone's open for a three, fine, kick it out. But we want you to shoot it. So I think, you know, the biggest thing there is, one, she's unselfish, but two, she learned that, okay, now it's time to step up. You know, you are a leader of this team, and, you know, we're going to put the ball in your hands more times than not. And then off the court, she's a great young lady. It goes with her unselfishness. She's very sweet. She's kind, soft-spoken, doesn't want the spotlight, you know, doesn't want the cameras on her, and is very shy in interviews. But she's just a terrific person. She's kind to everybody. She's kind to her teammates. She's a really good teammate. She's got a good sense of humor. And, You know, she's fun to be around. You know, it's funny sometimes you see these big athletes, you know, these 6'7" athletes, and it's in any sport, and you see that, you know, you forget that they're, you know, 18 to 21 years old, and in some respects they're still kids, and it's just fun to see, you know, someone like that have a chance to have fun and be a kid in addition to the, you know, the big girl work she's doing on the basketball floor. So yeah, she's a lot of fun. We're going to miss her, you know, not just on the floor, but in the locker room, because she's just a good kid and a good person. And, you know, hopefully she finds the right team in the WNBA and has success there.
Brad, does this title, you've been around for all three of them, right? This one hit a little bit different because the sport's ascended, and your school is at the top of this sport that's really captured the country by storm. I mean, I know I was in two different places on Sunday in the Midwest, a funeral home and a bar, and the game was on both places, and people were watching. Now they were all pulling for Iowa, but I was kind of a lonely soul there. But to have this happen to the Gamecocks at this point in the sport, to me, just, I don't know, they're all special, but this one's something else. I thought.
Yeah, no, it is. And for a lot, you know, they're all special for different reasons. Obviously, the one in 17 was great because it was the first one, and it was Asia Wilson leading the charge, you know, the local kid. And people forget in 17, you lost your All-American center before the start of the NCAA tournament when Elena Coates got hurt and couldn't play, and they still won it. You know, and then the 22 was special for a lot of reasons. That group was a special group, you know, the freshies that won theirs because they were the most professional, you know, kindest, just most wonderful people to be around. And it was a little bit of redemption for them because the year before they had lost in the Final Four on a missed putback that would have sent them to the championship game, you know, at the buzzer. So that was great. And then this one was special. You know, I know we've said it several times on the show. You graduated all five starters from last year's Final Four team and seven seniors overall. And here you are winning a national championship with five new starters. You know, I don't know that that's ever happened. So that was special. And to do it, to beat the team that beats you in the Final Four was great as well. So there's that whole, you know, that's what makes that special as well. To go undefeated, which has only been done 10 times. You know, we're only the fifth program to do it. UConn has done it six times. But to win three national championships since 2017, it's amazing. It's just amazing because of how the talent is more spread out now, where it used to be two or three schools that had all the players. Now, you know, there's 10, 11, 12 schools that have all the McDonald's All-Americans, you know, so there's a lot more really good teams out there that you have to beat to get there.
Well, Brett, revenge and payback narrative, obviously Raven embodied that, I think, anytime she was, you know, asked or given an opportunity to do so. But was that mentality really throughout every returning player on this roster, just like feeling as if, you know, it would just be so much greater and sweeter to get past this group, not just to win a championship?
I think I'd have to ask each of them in, you know, individually that did come back. I think it was mostly a Raven thing because of the wave off that, you know, the previous year. You know, people forget Raven actually shot the ball decently in that game. I think she hit three pointers in that game last year. It's not like she didn't score. But I think just that one moment where she kind of got waved off, you know, really stuck under her skin, which, hey, that's great. If that motivated her to get in the gym more in the off season and shoot the basketball better, which she did, you know, this year, that's great. But for the rest of this group, I never really heard them talking too much about what's next or we got to get them or this and that. It was always the next game. It was, you know, who we got? Okay, let's, you know, let's go take care of that. I never really saw them get too far ahead of themselves, which is a credit to them, because that's hard to do when you're successful. You know, you should be successful because of the talent that you have. But they weren't thinking about, you know, during the season, hey, I can't wait till we play LSU again, or I can't wait to, you know, get Iowa. It was, you know, who are we playing next week? Okay, you know, let's do this. And it's just always been about the next game, which I think is cool. You know, next year they're going to have that added pressure, similar to what the freshies had the previous year when, you know, they won it in 2022 and they had pretty much everybody back, you know, minus Destiny Henderson last season. you know, and everyone thought, oh, they're going to repeat again. And there was that pressure. And, you know, they fell one game short of the title game. And it was their only loss. And that was the only game people wanted to talk about. So there'll be that pressure next year of, okay, you've got pretty much everybody back other than your All-American center, which is a big deal. There'll be that pressure to repeat. And so it'll be interesting to see how they handle that. I mean, they've had the bullseye on them most of the year anyway, because they've been number one since the second week of the season. But, you know, there was a lot of other teams that were close this year. So it'll be interesting next year to see what other teams have and how they handle that pressure of being the defending champs that'll, you know, most likely be the preseason number one.
Well, no, they will be. There's no likely about it. I feel like that's not really a thing for this program. Now, I don't want to say the word team. It's a program. It's a plug and play program from transfers, freshmen. It really doesn't matter. Dawn gets them in there, and there's always enough leadership left over from the previous season that helps kind of bring this thing along. So what? They might lose a game or two here and there. Not lately, of course, but they might. But like the train doesn't fall off the tracks with the leadership in this program. And I think more than that, when I say leadership, clearly Dawn's the leader. I get it. She's the coach. But she said this publicly for years. I remember when I talked to her a couple of years ago, I think it was just a couple of years ago, we were talking about leadership, leadership, leadership. She's like, I empower them to lead themselves. Like, I don't want to have to be holding their hand on the floor. They need to get out there. They need to be coaches out there. She said, I was a coach on the floor when I played. I know what that's like. And I've got to have ladies who can lead themselves. And Brad, it's every year. It's something. Raven Johnson. I mean, how about that's the performance. I mean, she had 3 points. Forget that. Her feet were just moving for 40 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy and stuff. They own it.
She had that smile on her face defending Caitlin Clark the whole game, and she had that confidence that, you know, you're not getting the best of us this year, you know. And you're right. You know, the leadership kind of trickles down from coach, and it's the way she recruits players. I mean, she doesn't recruit certain types of players that are going to be in it just for themselves. And that kind of bleeds over into the culture of the program. And that's why you have players, outstanding players coming off the bench that are happy to do that. Now, of course, next year, they're all going to want to be starters. And hey, that's what you want. You want them to want to be starters, right? But how they, you know, how people like Ashlyn Watkins handled being basically the sixth woman. She was fine with that. You know, I'm sure next year she's going to want to be a starter, and she might be. Who knows? She was a starter at times this year. But it's neat when you can get that kind of unselfishness and leadership. And even when the new ones go into that, I mean, you know, the neat thing when you hear from some of the newcomers this year, Tahina Pau-Pau, who transferred from Oregon, and Tessa Johnson, who was a freshman, both of them will tell the story how when they were watching last year's national championship game, they both thought, I can go to South Carolina. If I'm at South Carolina, we would have won that game last year, because they knew, you know, there wasn't a consistent outside shooting threat last year. And both of them will tell you that was my thinking, that, hey, if I'm on South Carolina that year, we're winning it, and I can bring that, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of neat that you had leadership from a senior and a freshman as well, knowing that, hey, I can help this team win. I don't have to get shots every night. You know, I've said this before. Tahina Pau-Pau isn't one that has to get 10 shots every night. She's happy if she gets, you know, two or three, because that stretches everything out, and the result, they win. And that was what was neat about this team. They just wanted to win, and they did it. And to go undefeated, I still don't think that's hit me totally yet, that they won every darn game, because it's really hard to do. It doesn't happen often, especially, you know, sometimes you got to get a little lucky, or you have a buzzer beater like the Camilla Cardoso 3-pointer against Tennessee. But, you know, you play enough teams that are good enough to beat you that, you know, every once in a while you're going to slip up, especially on the road, and they didn't have it. And it's just really remarkable.
Like JC said, kind of the peak of the sport this year with all the attention, 24 million watched it. And you had all these incredible storylines in the Final Four. South Carolina obviously was one. Caitlin Clark was the story. Mm-hmm. And so on and so forth. You know, you had the LSU situation, then the Elite Eight. Carolina cut through all the crap, and they just went out and won games. You know, Caitlin Clark will forever be a story, Brad. She's transformed the game. Hats off to Dawn for taking time on the podium to congratulate her and thank her for her contribution to the sport. LSU brought eyeballs because they're villains. UConn is UConn. South Carolina is South Carolina, but what South Carolina did that none of those others could do with all those storylines, they cut through the crap and they won the games. And at the end of the day, as JC pointed out, there's a great point. This is the highest the sport's ever been, and they're the ones sitting on top of that mountain. It just doesn't get any better than that.
No, exactly. Yeah, you're right. Women's college basketball is more popular than it's ever been. I think, you know, the ratings for the championship game was the highest rated. It was the highest rated game of any men's or women's game, you know, this year. And I think it more than doubled the viewership from just 2 years ago. Again, Caitlin Clark had a big role in that because there's a lot of eyeballs on her, which is great because, you know, you need players like that. They're going to be faces of the game. If that's what's attracting eyeballs and corporate sponsors, you know, to get behind it. And most importantly, if that's what's attracting young girls to the sport, that's great. I mean, I've seen it so many times, especially in the last 5 or 6 years, as players are more out there with the audience. And I mean, I don't know how many times I saw Aaliyah Boston or Camilla or someone else over the years, you know, just wave to a little girl and it brings the little girl to tears, you know, because they're just so excited. Cause it's neat that now that these little girls have idols they can look up to. I mean, I'm sure, you know, when Dawn was growing up playing, her idols were probably, you know, 76ers, you know. She didn't maybe have that, and a lot of those great pros in women's sports didn't have the female athletes to look up to and say, I want to be like her, you know. Now they do, and that's cool, you know, and that's why someone like Caitlin Clark and Aaliyah Boston before her and Asia Wilson before that, that's why it's so great. If any of you have daughters, if little girls have another girl to look up to and a young woman to look up to, that's great. Because, you know, they've got a good role model and people that are doing the right things, especially off the court, which, you know, most of these women do. You know, some of our male role models don't exactly do all the right things off the court off the field. And it's just great when you can have people like that to look up to and grow the game. And it'll be fun to see, you know, who's that face next year of women's college basketball, because there's a lot of terrific young talent up there. And we'll see who steps into that role.
Yep, it's a sport that the ladies stick around for 3 or 4 years. It's like the old days of college athletics. Yeah, it allows you to fall in love.
Right?
yep. It allows you. That might be Malaysia Full Wiley. She almost had another oop-de-oop in the game the other day. She tried. She tried. Yeah. That would have been the highlight. That would have been it.
Well, and that's what you brought up. That's one of the things I love about covering women's sports and women's college basketball in particular, is that you're going to have your players there, you know, 99% of the time. You know, unless they transfer, you're going to have your stars with your team for 4 years. And that's what makes it fun, is, you know, you get to know the players better. They become faces of programs because they're not one and dones and stuff like that. And I think that's in part what helps make women's college basketball great, is you can grow and identify with, you know, these players as they evolve, like in 4 years. Like, look at Tessa Johnson, had a career high 19 points in the title game as a freshman. I can't wait to see what she can do next year, you know, and what she's going to do, you know, 3 years after that, because if she's performing like that in her first year in the national championship, I can't wait to see what she can do next.
She can shoot it, man.
She's clutch. Yep.
She's fun too. The country got to see this team's personality during this run, and that can only help the Gamecocks. They just keep getting better, and we all appreciate that.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about it. Brad, we'll let you run on that note, but wanted to congratulate you once again on a phenomenal year. It's really neat to, you always say yes when we ask. We can't thank you enough for that. But most importantly, thanks for what you do for the Gamecocks. You're a great voice, and the university is glad to have you, and I know fans are too. Man, we really appreciate everything you do.
Well, thank you guys for having me on, and I'm just having a blast. Glad to be along for the ride.
All right. Hey, tell your bro, Mike, we said hey.
Yeah, I will. My younger brother.
Your younger brother. Brad, we'll talk soon. We'll have you on soon. Bye. Thank you, man. There you go. Brad Muller, the voice of the Gamecocks. He's got an 11th ring. One of them is going to have to go on his toe, as he said. Which toe? TBD. We've got Gamecock football when we return. Don't go anywhere. ITG will be right back.
We have started in 1979. Because we're a manufacturer, we're able to control our costs. That's why we like to manufacture as much of the product as we can, because in our factory stores, we can offer a competitive edge over other people around the country. When people come into one of our Palm Casuals, it's like they're buying their car at Detroit. They're going right to the factory and buying their car.
30-day money-back guarantee. That's a big deal with us. I mean, we give 30 days to do anything. I mean, return it, change it, get a different color, get your money back.
When you pull into a store and it says Palm Casual, you know you're at a factory store.
Rescues and Resin, proud supporters of Carolina Rise. They are also proud partners of the show. They make products you can't get anywhere else. Custom designed wood and resin products that make your tailgate, make your home, or make anything stand out. Order a custom cutting board, coasters, wall art, tables, and more. Contact Dustin and Tabitha at rescuesandresin.com today. rescuesandresin.com and put your imagination to work. Rescues and Resin, proud partners of Inside the Gamecocks, the show.
Hey Gamecock fans, Mike Morgan here. During my time in Columbia, one of my favorite places to eat was Salsarita's. When I go back now for work or any other reason, it's still Salsarita's. Yeah, I'm like you. I love tacos. I love Tex-Mex. Where are you going to go to get them? Well, you've got two convenient Salsarita's locations, one in Lexington in the Target Center and one in West Columbia as well. Now, if you like tailgating, and who doesn't? Whether it's for a football game or anything else, they've got the catering hotline. Get yourself some Fiesta packs to take tailgating. Get yourself the Three Amigos bundles for tailgating. They make catering easy with a fresh, hot setup. And again, you just call the phone number 803-543-6297 to set it up. You can also look them up online, or you can even download the app. Salsarita's is just a cut above the rest. That's why they're serving Williams-Brice Stadium in the South Stands, also serving in the Colonial Life Arena. Again, that catering hotline number, make it easy for you and the folks out there. You don't need to settle for sandwiches every time. 803-543-6297. 803-543-6297.
It's 2024 and it's time to get in shape. Charleston Fitness Equipment can help you do just that in Mount Pleasant. The Wilkins family, big Gamecock fans and proud supporters of Carolina Rise and our programming on the Chiefs Sports Network. But most importantly, proud supporters of you getting healthy and staying healthy. CharlestonFitnessEquipment.com. Find them on the Chiefs Sports app and in Mount Pleasant. Happy New Year.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
It is 12:41. Welcome back inside the Gamecocks. The show. Schubert is back. Schubert. Mad Dog Mullinax is back, and his mustache and that weird little thing he's got growing on his chin, but it's all good.
It's a soul patch.
Mad Dog's mustache and soul patch. It sounds like a bar. Right.
Yeah. Anyway. Potentially future plans. Hey, how about that?
hell yeah, McGranahan ahead. Billy G's Carolina Barbecue presents the national anthem. Billy G's Carolina Barbecue.com to order their catering. Carolina Barbecue Sauce.com to order the sauce and the rub. Have it dropped off right there at your doorstep. Just a couple days, it'll be right there. You make all the food taste better, including the veggies that the kids won't eat. This will make them eat it. I promise. I use it on my 5-year-olds. It works. I can assure you of that. Billy G's Carolina Barbecue.com. Schubert. I understand that Lenora Sellers has entered the transfer portal. No, I'm just kidding.
Ah. Jeez, meltdown city.
Jackson Hughes did enter the transfer portal this morning, reserve offensive lineman. All right, so Tony put out a report yesterday that ruffled a bunch of feathers. Did you read it?
Yeah, I mean, I knew it.
You knew what? You knew what about it?
I knew the offensive line struggled. The offense in general was did not have their best scrimmage.
Yeah,
by far. But I don't think it's reason to panic. I think, the part about some of the guys being out of shape is concerning. There's no excuse for that, at all. Supposed to have a really good nutrition program here. You're supposed to have a really good strength and conditioning program because you're an SEC school, and there's no reason for guys to be out of shape. And if they're out of shape, they don't need to have a scholarship for very long. Period. I don't care. Get in shape or get out would be my message to those guys. But as is the case with everything, you read Tony's article, it says some, not all. So you can't sit there and throw a blanket, on everybody on the offensive line. They have to be better. I mean, if they're healthy, there's no excuse to not be better than last year. That's the key to the offense this season, really, is get that line better. I don't think that the first spring scrimmage, the fact that the offense struggled, is a bad thing. I think where you get concerned with scrimmage results is when the offense can't be stopped by your defense. And those are the times where scrimmages have dictated kind of what the in-season performance would be. I remember in 2020, Colin Hill was carving with one receiver, was carving up the Carolina defense in the preseason. And we saw what happened that year. That defense was That defense is bad. My screen just went blank for some reason. But look, it's fine. I mean, and I don't want, because I see the chat box getting overreacting already. I don't want that. Oh, they look out of shape. It's April 9th. So there is a long time for them to get back in shape. And if they are out of shape, they need to get with the program, and somebody starting with the head coach and everybody else needs to tell them that. Hey, you're not going to play if you don't get your butt in shape. Whoever is in charge of nutrition now, they hired somebody new from the Cubs, right? When the previous lady went to Nebraska. Whoever's in charge of that, nutrition's never been a problem around here. And my understanding is from talking to some people about the newer guy that he's really good. I mean, so what's the deal? You need to get with it. I mean, and a lot of these guys too are talented guys coming out of high school that they need to take advantage of the opportunity. All that said, this is not a gigantic red flag or anything. This is leftover frustration in the people's minds from last season. Because people have refused to believe, for whatever reason, against all facts, that there were a bunch of injuries up front, and that's primarily why they struggled, right? It was a thin group to begin with. Somebody in the chat box said, just heard how good they were all preseason last season. Not if you're listening to me. I said, this group does not have depth. They have to stay healthy, and the older offensive linemen have to play the best football they've ever played. And neither one of those things happened. Because you not only had Nichols go down with an injury, Tyshawn Wanamaker decided, it's probably it for me. Now, there's another guy that has started for 2 or 3 years that went down. The transfers were not ready. Cason Henry goes down the first play against North Carolina. Everybody, Vershawn Lee, they put him at tackle. Next thing you know, he's hurt and out 2 games. Bob Alade was hurt. I mean, it was just one thing after another. Those are facts, okay? But it's also factual that this group as a whole in the first scrimmage left a lot to be desired. Now, I think because of the overwhelming response to it and the fact that, it got out that they didn't do good, I think this will serve to light a little bit of a fire and ultimately is going to be a positive and facilitate some improvement. And if somebody's not working as hard as they need to do to get in shape and stay in shape, maybe it lights a fire under their butt. You know, but I don't think that, you know, you don't wave the white flag for the war after one battle where one of your groups doesn't perform that well. I mean, because you can flip it around and say, well, the defense is a lot better. You know what I'm saying? It works both ways. Now, do I have some concerns? Yes, I do. You know, I'll be honest. I got some concerns about this this bunch heading into next season. My concerns are probably a little different than y'all's. You know, I think, you know, looking at receiver, they need to get some guys out of the portal, I think, just to make – just so I'll feel a little better about it. But I felt the same way about running back last year, and they didn't get anybody. So who knows? But I do think that, you know, the offensive line thing, in my understanding too, and talking to some of my contacts, was there was a lot of mental errors by the O-line. It was a lot of false starts, lining up wrong, offsides, that kind of thing. Which those things are correctable, you know. First scrimmage, yeah, you don't want them, but that gives you something to coach on. You know, if they were all perfect, you'd probably get a little worried. So, I'm not willing to sit here and go, oh my God, it's going to be a terrible year on the offense. I think that's massive overreaction based on the product on the field in games last year. Which, if you look closely, there were reasons for that. But do they need to get it together? Yeah, especially if there's guys that are out of shape. I mean, that's unacceptable. You just had the winter program. You're supposed to come in good shape. So they need to run their asses off this summer. Get in shape. You know, there's still time to correct whatever issues there are. But it can't linger. And it's got to be, you know, it's got to be kind of a group effort. So some of these guys need to just get with it or move on. You know, that's at this point. If you're Shane Beamer, I think you got to lay down the law with some of these guys, you know, that kind of thing. So I don't know. I think that's it. Jalen Nichols, by the way, went to Memphis.
Is that where he landed? Memphis?
Yeah, he and Mario both are at University of Memphis.
Wow, I didn't realize he landed at Memphis.
And I know nobody wants to hear about them being out of shape. I mean, these guys are given every opportunity. I mean, first class, like I said, everything from nutrition to training. I mean, you got to take advantage of it. Fundamentally, ultimately, it's up to the player, you know. And if you got a bunch of guys that don't want to get with it, that's a big problem. So, you know, my feedback from the scrimmage was also a little bit better. I think that than Tony's, there were some players on offense that I was told looked pretty good. Larva Dane had a nice scrimmage. I heard Lenoris looked pretty good. You know,
I heard Mazio Bennett looked great. For freshman on Saturday.
I think he's probably, if I'm penciling in three starters right now, Bennett's there in my starting group. So, you know, I think that you know, and look, BRC says. Somebody told me Dylan Stewart looked unbelievable. Part of that could be the line. Let's not sit here and play this game where every time somebody does something good on defense that you hear about, oh, well, it's our offensive line, so it sucks. That just brings everybody. That brings the whole team down. And in years of evaluating football players, it doesn't make a fiddler's foo, you know, sometimes, like, what in terms of evaluating a guy. Like, really, what kind of O-line they're going against. Because you either got a quick first step or you don't. You either have hand violence or you don't. You either get to your quarterback or you can't. You know, and for a freshman to be doing what he's doing, that says a lot. I don't care how much the O-line as a whole is struggling. Now, these are more individual matchups. No. So,
well, that's why those receivers look good, JC, is because our corners are for crap. I mean, you know how this works. Yeah, you know how
the corner, right? Corners are and Cam points out O-line's traditionally behind this time of year. Yeah, the offense is all right. So that's what you always want in your first scrimmages, your defense to be ahead of your offense. Like I said, it is a big red flag when they're not. And the other year, the offense was ahead of defense in the preseason was 14. You guys remember that? Remember that defense that year? Dylan Thompson was chucking it all over the yard in preseason, you know. And
yeah, I was about to say, I remember the offense that year too, though. It was a record setting offense, but the defense was terrible.
But there have been a lot of good offenses come through here, even when Steve Spurrier was coaching, that have had terrible, terrible first scrimmages in spring and fall, and sometimes terrible spring games. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Clemson is, they had their spring game. Their defense did a lot of good things. They'll probably be rely on their defense. Eric says, so basically the month of April is shot. They're not going to improve dramatically in 10 days. Eric, that's very dramatic. I mean, they've been working. I mean, it's not shot. They're all working just because one or two guys is out of shape, man. I mean, so you got to get them in shape. Yeah, they're behind, but there's 85 guys on the team, and that's just that. And that's what I don't like about sometimes. And we have to cover the scrimmages. You know, we have to give you information. That's what you pay for, okay? And we're going to give it to you. We've brought it for 17 years. But these days, the reaction to it just boggles my mind because people take it, you know, just like somebody was talking about how, just heard about how good you were all preseason. Now you were hearing about individual players that were going to start. Like, what are the position battles? Who's going to start? Who's going to play? Nobody say these guys are going to take us to victory against Georgia. Nobody's saying that. You know, you got to put things in perspective sometimes. And that's what I'm starting to hate about all this is that, you know, all of a sudden you say one thing, well, these guys maybe need to get in shape. They didn't have a good scrimmage. And the whole month of April is shot for the whole team and whole program. And then somebody mentioned coach, that's coaching. You know, we blame coaches and administrators around here for things sometimes that are well beyond their control. Well beyond their control. And look, nobody's coming to save you, Gamecock fans. There's no savior coach or AD out there that's going to come in and flip the switch and make things better. I promise. And so that's the deal, you know. Am I concerned? I don't like hearing about guys being out of shape or not with the program. I just don't like it. I didn't like hearing about it during the Spurrier era when half the team would skip summer workouts.
Yeah,
because they weren't out mandatory, but. In my experience, some of the off-season concern kind of fixes itself by the season. You know, there's some signs that it won't. One of those is the offense being ahead of the defense, and that's not happening. So I guess I'm pretty cool. I'm looking forward to the spring game, eyeballing some of these guys myself, and I'll actually be there in person. And so looking forward to kind of doing that and seeing them. Seeing what happens, but and in general, like, you know, to wrap this up, somebody says, you know, any positive news in football? Nah, but you guys have kind of made it that way because everything positive anybody said this whole offseason, most fans just react with this hatred or some smart ass remark. Yeah, so why should we even bother? I mean, you know, all most of the folks out there want to do now is just with this football program is grasp the negative, whine about a lack of commitments, whine about the end of last season, you know, whine about injuries, you know, anything positive we put out, we get accused of being homers. So no, there's nothing. If I knew something positive, I probably wouldn't repeat it because I got better things to do with my life than to sit there and hear the peanut gallery. Question number one, question my credibility. Number two, be overly negative about these players that are working hard. 98% of them are. Trash the fan base, trash Ray Tanner, trash every new coach they got, whine about commitments. I just got better things to do. So, no, there is no positive news right now. And like I said, I'd have to think really hard before I would pass anything along at this point. And it's amazing. Because it's just directed at football right now. Even baseball, as negative as many people are about that program, has not caught the crap football has. Maybe it's because basketball is winning. I don't know. I don't know what it is. But I've just noticed any little positive tidbit about football, nobody wants to hear. And my job, too, is to serve my audience. So if you guys don't want to hear anything positive about football, we won't. Period.
Couple of quick notes from Shane Beamer. We got to hit a timeout. Matt Anderson going to jump in as well. Hale McGranahan ahead at 1:30 today. Coach Beamer in the scrimmage this weekend. Quote, we're still competing and those guys are making each other better. He also did mention, though, that there will be some players who will miss the spring game dealing with some small injuries. Obviously they're going to be much more careful to not get them banged up. On Big Tree and Trevon Baugh being able to go through spring practice, he said it is huge. You think about it, we started 5 true freshmen last season. Pretty much every freshman you started didn't get to go through spring practice, and it is huge to be able to go through spring ball. You have Josiah, Cam Pringle, and Blake Franks, who should still be in high school, and instead they are going through spring practice. Obviously, the moment is not too big for them, and they are making progress on the offensive line. So a couple of notes there from Shane Beamer today. All right, when we return, again, Matt Anderson and Hale McGranahan will both be joining us back-to-back. Gamecock Traditions has all your gear, the national championship gear, all of it. It's there. Win some, lose none, right? You know they say something like that? Isn't that, what is it, Phil? You win some,
lose none.
You win some, you lose none. Yeah, that's right.
That's the way it happened.
They've got those on a t-shirt now. That's the new slogan of the Gamecocks, according to Under Armour. Order it, GamecockTraditions.com, or head to Lexington or the Village at Sand Hill and pick it up for yourselves. And don't forget the 30-ounce Yeti Gamecock cups that can put 30 ounces of chicken cock bourbon in there. Believe me, I've never tried, I promise. Or maybe I have. I don't know. Final hour coming up.
Down here in the South, we don't always see eye to eye. While our taste in college football teams, or what sauce, if any, goes best on a rack of ribs, or what to mix with our Dixie vodka might be up for debate, we can all agree there's nothing better than a Southern tailgate. And like our favorite college teams, our ingredients come from small towns and big cities. They're grown in Southern soil, are crafted by Southern hands, and proudly represent the South in our backyard and beyond. So raise a glass of Dixie Southern Vodka to celebrate being made in America and raised in the South.
The season rolls on at Love Chevy, where the inventory is overflowing and the deals are in full bloom. Rev up your season with Love's exclusive specials on Suburbans, Tahoes, Silverados, Trailblazers, and the ever-popular Chevy Trax. They're hard to find. At Love Chevy, get behind the wheel and feel the possibilities. New adventures, new destinations, just you and the open road. Act now for Springtacular Savings at Love Chevrolet. The best selection of new Chevys. The lowest price, guaranteed. The other dealers upsell, overcharge, and will say most anything to get the sale. At Love Chevy, satisfied customers say it all. Things like helpful, knowledgeable, honest, and fun. Your trusted hometown Chevy dealer since 1961. I-26 at Harbison and at lovechevy.com. Together, let's drive.
That's the power of
Hey Gamecock fans, this is Roman Kimball with South Carolina Baseball. My friends over at Electric Bikes of Charleston have the largest selection of e-bikes in South Carolina. You can cruise up to high speeds of 28 miles per hour, which is about 70 miles an hour slower than my fastball. Stay in shape and enjoy your life with an electric bike from Electric Bikes of Charleston, where buyers come from all across South Carolina. Visit electricbikescharleston.com. See you at the ballpark and go Gamecocks.
Hey Gamecock Nation, my name is Kyle, longtime listener of the show and avid golfer. I wanted to take my game to the next level, but let's face it, golf is a hard game to learn on your own. I heard the ad from McKellar Enterprises and reached out to the owner and former Gamecock golfer, Meredith Taylor. In just 2 months of working with Meredith, I shot my lowest round ever and I've never felt more confident in my golf. So if you're looking to take your game to the next level, go to McKellarEnterprises.org and book your lesson today with former Gamecock golfer, Meredith Taylor. Go Gamecocks.